Welcome back, everyone, to the Tennis Galaxy podcast. It's the first episode post Wimbledon, and all of us are getting back to the hard courts. But you know, it's good to be back. It's good to have you guys back, Prakash and Rajke. How are you doing, guys? It's been a long time since we did that episode.
Hi guys, yes, it does seem like a long time, but this is always the case that after Wimbledon, we have a few weeks before the US Open, but there are some exciting tournaments in these weeks. So,
and Vakash, how are you doing?
Hi Prasad, yeah, I'm doing good, you know. So, yeah, definitely there's always a lull before the big North American hard court swing starts.
Oh yeah, and recovering from the big loss, 5-hour loss. Resetting and coming back again, but anyway, the agenda of today's episode, I mean, is a debatable topic which Rajke posted, and that got the tweet got a lot of engagement, I must say, Rajke. And if you could read out the question for our listeners, that would be great.
Okay, so the question was, which is the most incredible tennis achievement in the Open era? And the options were, first option, Nadal, 12 French Opens. Second, Djokovic Grand Slam. Third, Federer, 23 consecutive semis. I mean, in Grand Slams, obviously.
Yeah.
And then last was other. So these were the four options.
Yeah, and that kind of got in a lot of votes, isn't it? How many votes did that end with, the poll?
699, just one short of 700, unfortunately.
And so let's round it up to 700. So let's round it up to 700. Amazing. So that's
like
an impressive.
I could vote myself. So you know, you can count my vote because I started the poll. I couldn't vote. So that's 700.
that's an impressive Twitter debut, by the way. Debut poll. And
yeah, I was a bit surprised, honestly. Yeah. You know? But well, that's how popular tennis is. We are in the golden era. Right, I
mean, that's how popular tennis is, and that's what happens when you tag Donald Tendulkar in your tweet.
That too, yes, yes. Yeah, I have to thank Prakash for retweeting and engaging.
Yeah. Well, I think, yeah, it's kind of a very interesting question. So, kind of, I think, appeal to a lot of people.
And
because it engaged all the three fan bases, basically, right? So
that's true. And I was a bit surprised. Of course, we'll go into more detail. But I was surprised to see that more people did not vote for other, because there are so many other things I can think of. But like, Twitter has a limit on the number of options. So otherwise, I would have put in more options. But
absolutely. Yeah, and as you could hear all the chatter that we had just now, that's the agenda of the episode. Obviously, we have the hard court coming up, Montreal and Cincinnati and the US Open. But that's in the later part. That's just a quick wrap up before we end the episode. But now let's get into this topic. Did you hear the three options? Let me repeat the question again. So Rajke's question was, which is the greatest achievement in tennis's Open era? And the four options were Nadal's 12 French Opens, Djokovic's Grand Slam, Djokovic's Slam, Federer's 23 consecutive semi-final appearances in Grand Slams, and the fourth option was other. And let's start with the first option then, and let's see what our experts feel. Let's start with Rajke. Rajke, Nadal's 12 French Open, right from 2005 to 2014 and then 2017 to 2019.
Yeah, so this is, like as I said, I couldn't vote because I started the poll and Twitter doesn't allow you to vote. But that would have been my choice, because that's just incredible. You know, if you look at the next highest number of slams in the men's. In the women, we have Navratilova with 9 Wimbledons, but in the men, it's Federer with 8 Wimbledons, you know. So this is 12 French Opens. That's like a 50% improvement over 8, right?
Yeah.
That's incredible to improve a record by that much. It's just crazy. And remember that Nadal is still playing, and we just don't know how many he's going to finish with. So who knows? Maybe he wins a couple more. Maybe he wins 5 more. We're talking about incredible numbers here. And we talked about this after the French Open, in fact, that he's got more French Opens than Borg, and Labour have total slams. They have 11 slams, everything put together. And Nadal has his 12 French Opens on such a physically demanding surface. And it's over a period of time, you know. So you think about 2005, that's towards the latter part of the Gaudio Correa Quarton era. And then, of course, he withstood the assault of Federer. And then he withstood Djokovic there. And now the next generation TM, you know, I mean, it's just incredible how dominant he's been over such a long time.
And we're talking about Grand Slams here. People don't win titles in double digits. This is an achievement of Grand Slams in digits,
That too. Yeah. No one's ever won any tournament. I mean, this is the record for any tournament. And doing that at a Grand Slam is amazing. You would expect that to be done in maybe, you know, a 250 level or 500. But Nadal did it in a Grand Slam. Yeah, it's incredible. Just incredible.
That's the first option, and that's Raj K with his views. And Prakash, over to you, sir.
Hi, Prasad. So, yeah, I mean, when I looked at it, each of them are pretty unique in their way, and definitely, I think the one that I looked at was, you know, Djokovic's 4 in a row. And I thought, I feel, you know, it's only, and that too, he's done it over 3 surfaces. It's not like, you know, when Labour did it, it was only grass and clay. But, you know, here he had to do it over, and the hard courts too, they are, in a way, you can say there is variation. So to have done that, I think I feel that to me was, I would say, is, a more incredible achievement. As good as the 12 French Opens are, I think to some extent, I feel the 12 French Opens kind of also, at least for me, hints at a lack of opposition. Yes, Federer and Djokovic are there as rivals, but they are not really clay courters. They're not like, their best surface is not clay. Maybe you can put it down as the second best surface for Djokovic, but if you look at his record now, the way he's done on grass, I think you have to put it down as third best surface for both Federer and Djokovic. And maybe even if you take the conditions into account, they even do better at indoors. So, in a way, we do not have, I would say, you know, like Federer and Djokovic to some extent. In 75% of the tour, they are basically kind of, you can say Djokovic is kind of a successor to Federer, like the next generation. And they have kind of gone at each other, but there is no similar generation following Nadal. And Thiem comes 10 years later, but I do not think he's in the league of, you know, other multiple. I mean, he might still end up winning multiple Grand Slams. At French Open, but I think that might be again due to a lack of no one else showing up at the French Open, no?
About Thiem, it's just that he doesn't cross that finishing line, isn't it? Because the finishing line is itself Nadal, and he's been there all these years. There's no one showing up, but Nadal's you have to get over Nadal, basically. That's like we said, you know, the Australian Open is all about reaching the final and beating Djokovic. And
Thiem hasn't even won a Masters series on clay. When he had the chance to beat, Zverev actually beat him in the final, you know, Madrid.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he hasn't had a big title yet. And I think he's now 25 years already. And is almost, of course, but I think this longevity of players of late, that might help him, you know, going forward. But as I said, you know, I think to some extent, the 12 kind of negates the achievement to some extent, you know, because there is a factor of lack of competition to some extent, at least in my opinion. But for Djokovic, they have done those 4 in a row, you know, which, to be fair enough, Federer and Nadal too had shots at that. I think Federer had multiple chances and was stopped by Nadal in 2006 and 2007. or 2006 and 7. You start by Nadal from getting the four in a row, but still Djokovic went that one extra step and got that. To me, that sounds more impressive.
Rajke, okay. before we can get any thing from you, let's elaborate the slam thing for listeners who might be, you know, unaware of the term, the slam. Then let's go on to your opinion of the Grand Slam achievement of Novak Djokovic. And then also, guys, let's go on to talk about how important even Federer's 23 consecutive semifinals were. So, Rajke, if you could start off
with
that.
I want to talk about that because that to me is the most interesting record. So, I'm waiting to talk about that. But before that, the slam.
Yeah.
So, the slam, you know, it's a bit confusing tennis because there are overlapping terminologies. So, slam can refer to one particular tournament. For example, Wimbledon 2019 is a slam.
Correct.
And you can also say that's a grand slam. Very confusingly, grand slam can also refer to winning all the four. Okay, so if I say he won a grand slam, it's not obvious whether it's one tournament or four in a row. And the ITF initially had this requirement that winning four in a row would be a grand slam. But I think now it's been changed that you have to win four in a row in the same year. So which is what's called a calendar year grand slam. So Djokovic did not actually do that because he won the first two in 2015 and the next two in 2016. So even though he won four in a row, they were not in the same year. Okay. So some people would not call this a grand slam because for them, grand slam is winning all in the same year. But because no one else has done it ever since Rod Laver, I prefer to call it a grand slam. And to me, it's a non-calendar year grand slam because it's not in the same year. And a calendar year grand slam is if you win all in the same year. But it's still sort of like a grand slam. Yeah. So which is why some people, just to avoid, just to make it clear that he did not win all four in the same year, prefer to call it a Djokovic slam or a Joker slam or a Nole slam. Like when Serena did the same thing, winning four in the same four Serena in a row, slam. But not the same year, it was called the Serena slam. And if Federer had done it would have been called the Roger slam. And if Nadal had done it, it would have been called the Rafa slam. So the convention is to take the name or the nickname and then add the slam
after
that.
It's not a personal slam, basically.
Correct.
But I prefer to call it a grand slam because that's the way ITF used to call it till 2015.
I think
if I'm not
it's
mistaken.
Just better to call it a non-calendar year grand slam. Very
yeah, the perfect terminology is the non-calendar year grand slam. But that's grand a kind slam. Of grand that's slam. But yeah, it's that's the most precise term. And I wanted to write it that way, but again, Twitter had some character limits, so I had to shorten it. Which is why if you take the third option, I could just write 23 consecutive semis. I couldn't write that it was, you know, in a row, but in slams, but anyway.
But I mean, it's understood for most people. I think for most tennis aficionados,
like if you're a tennis
fan, it's understood
fan,
that if it's a personal slam, it is understood it's a non-calendar year grand slam.
So Rajke, we are talking about 2015 Wimbledon US and 2016 Australian and French Open. Just to make it clear for everyone who still couldn't get it, because so that's four in a row, isn't it? A guy to held or fold majors in a row, in a row, And Prakash,
let me just clarify one thing that Prakash said, which again was confused. It was even more confused my wording, I think. What I meant was Djokovic's Grand Slam. So I didn't actually call the Djokovic Grand Slam. Do you see what I mean? Nadal, 12 semis, Djokovic, Grand Slam, and Federer, 23 in a row. So I wasn't calling it Djokovic Grand Slam. Do you see what I mean? It was Djokovic, and the achievement was Grand Slam. So I didn't actually call it the personal slam. So yeah, that's why some people may have got confused. But anyway, so it was four in a row, more importantly,
Correct. And and he could have had, he's also had a couple of chances, isn't it, Rajke? The 2011-12, where the 12 final where he lost to Nadal, and then...
That's right.
2019 semi-final, he went out in the semi-final. He could have had that again. But also, Rajke, Prakash, and Prakash, if you would agree, he's won all the 9 ATP Masters 1000 titles, which no one has achieved, not even Federer.
So let's not talk about the careers, because then Federer has done a lot of other things.
That's
a separate discussion. But yes, he has done it. But we are just talking about this particular accomplishment. And you're very right that Federer had two chances to do it. Prakash said that. Djokovic had two chances to do it. And Nadal had one chance to do it. A lot of people forget that. But basically,
he lost in the quarterfinal.
Yes, he lost in the quarterfinals. Yeah, he didn't reach the finals for sure.
Right,
and
yeah.
He lost to David Ferrer in the quarterfinals.
Yeah.
That's 2011.
I think Ferrer is only here, and in both his chances, he reached the final. Djokovic did it twice out of his three chances. Once he went to the semis.
Yeah. This year, the semis this year, and the final in 2012, correct? And
yeah.
Oh, I see. So, okay, yeah.
And he finished it once, of course.
And if you look at Federer, if you look at Federer, 2004 three titles, 2006-07 three titles, 6-07 was two finals, isn't it? And after that, I think 2009 he could have done it again if he hadn't lost that big Australian Open final because he went on to win the French Open and the Wimbledon, and he obviously had a 2008 US Open.
But hang on. There's a difference between the gap being a middle slam and the gap being the last slam.
Because
at that point you don't know. Like Federer did not know in 2009 Australian Open that if we had won it, it would have been four in a row. We don't know. That's why we're only talking about like the chances where they won three and lost in the fourth. Otherwise, it's a bit more complicated.
Yeah, correct. Yeah,
but it's a very interesting thing though with Federer in the 2009, right?
Yeah.
He lost two five-set finals, the Australian Open and the US Open.
Yeah.
And of course, they are middle slams. But if you look at it, right, he had won the US Open in 2008.
Yeah.
He won the Australian Open in 2010.
Yeah.
So technically, he could have basically, either of those five-setters, right, if he had gone his way, it was one set away, basically, right?
Correct.
He would have been in contention for doing a third time. But anyway, generally, and it would have been different for him because, like, the fourth slam, right? The two times he attempted was the French Open against basically Nadal, right? So, if he had either of these, right? Especially if the US Open, right? Imagine he would have had the Wimbledon 2009 final would have been even more crazier because that could have been him going for the Roger Slam as well, you know? And which he won like 16-14 the fifth against Roddick. So, but I mean, it's a very interesting run of events he put there. But yeah, obviously, them being the middle son makes a lot of difference.
But basically, very well put about the slam, the second option.
Let me give my opinion as to why I don't. So I completely agree with all of Prakash's points, and these achievements are close. But here's why I don't think that Djokovic's Grand Slam is as good as, the 12 French Opens. And that's because, as we said, other people have come close to doing it. Djokovic himself has come close to doing it a couple of occasions, right, in 2015 and now very recently as well. So, I mean, if Federer and Djokovic could have done it like three times, then is it that special? Whereas Nadal's 12... no one's come close in any other slam, even with the caveats that Prakash mentioned. So I feel like an achievement becomes even more special when no one's even come close to doing it. And that's why I don't rate Djokovic's Grand Slam. It's a fantastic achievement, but others have come close. So,
yeah, Prakash. So let's go on to the third option. And that third option is Federer's 23 consecutive semi-final appearances. And Prakash, correct me if I'm wrong, 2004 Wimbledon, the way up to 2010 Australian Open, isn't it? And then all you can see is 2010 French Open quarterfinals. So 2004 Wimbledon, right from there up to, 2010, the Australian Open, every semi-final, Federer was there. So Rajke, let's get your views because you described it as interesting and you might have gone for that.
I would have gone for that, but there are a couple of caveats that I want to attach there as well. First of all, a lot of Federer fans are surprised to see that I picked this, and some of them said, why not like the 20 Grand Slams, why not the 310 weeks? Well, my logic is similar to what I told you about the Djokovic Grand Slam, that 310 weeks, other people have come close, and the 20 Grand Slams, Nadal is just two Grand Slams away, so he's won 18, whereas this 23 is semis, right? I mean, there's no one else who's got more than 14. I mean, Djokovic got 14 semis in a row. And what you remember is that he won 14 out of these 23 semis, Federer. So it's not the case that... some people said, why are you glorifying semis? It's just finishing in the top four. Point is, No, there are some of these that he won. He won quite a few of these. He reached the finals in like 18 out of 19 slams in his purple patch. So this is not just about the semis. It's about Federer's incredible consistency between 2004 Wimbledon to 2010 Australian Open, as you said. So to me, that is sustained excellence over almost 6 years. Imagine taking part in competitions for 6 years. Every single time you're in the last four. Okay, and many times you win, many times you're in the final, but that's like Usain Bolt or maybe some other sprinter running 23 sprints every single time he's on the podium in an Olympics. That's just ridiculous consistency. No one comes near to that, and you had to have watched Federer in those years to realize, you know, what this guy brought to the tennis courts. So to me, that's absolutely a fantastic achievement.
And Prakash, let's get you
the same similar thing with even. The consecutive quarterfinals, you know, he said that at 36. And I believe Djokovic again was second, you know, he's second in that list. So with these things, right? Yeah, so Federer, and of course the finals is just ridiculous because he got both the highest and the second most consecutive finals with, you know, he had a streak of 10 and 8 in that 18 out of 19
He reached 18 out of 19 finals. So I could have put that as the third option too. So basically, it was this period. That's what I wanted to point out. Of course, you can put the whole of Federer's career, right? But that's sort of like a boring option to put, you know, like achievement is same as career. You know, you have to pick some records. So that's where I picked.
Put it in perspective. Record. 23 is the number of semifinals that Sampras made in his entire career in the Grand Slams. And 18 finals was what he made in his entire career, and Federer put that together in just that patch of, like, you know, six years. 24
and also 23 slams, how many people play 23 slams in a row? I don't think Nadal has ever played 23 slams in a row. Forget reaching semifinals 23 times in a row.
That's another thing, of course. I was actually trying to think about, like, you know, if you think about this way, Federer not retiring in like nearly 1500 professional matches, right? I want to know, I think, what is the next number? I'm not sure. Like, that one, I have to look at it. No, I can't think of anyone who has played, you know. Maybe Cilic is a recorder. He hasn't retired in a long, long time.
Correct.
But, to think that's of people not retiring point, over 15.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
And a similar thing is that you can use the same thing for these... consecutive Grand Slam matches, right? Where Federer turned up. Of course, if you look at this record way of consecutive Grand Slam appearances, right? Of course, that he's been overtaken by Feliciano Lopez and Verdasco. Yeah. But what is lost in that is that they don't play nearly as many matches. Like in their entire run of those 75 slams, they haven't played anywhere near. So I think, you know, if I remember this, I checked this up once. I think Federer played nearly 200 plus Grand Slam matches without, like, you know, skipping them, basically. The one where he missed was the 2016 US Open when he, you know, down for the year. So before that, I think 2000.
No, he missed the French Open as well, right?
French Open 2016, French Open 3 years in a row, 2016-18. French Open.
Before the French Open 2016, then, yeah. If you take it from 2000, I think US Open was somewhere or one of those. I think US Open he skipped 2000 or something, or 99. But after that, till the 2016 French Open,
Prakash,
he basically played every Grand Slam match. So that's about 200 plus Grand Slam matches.
Yeah, if you look at that, correct. If you look at that, 1999 to 2016, none of them have been skipped.
Yeah, that's right.
Only the French Open. Yeah, so we start the 2016, obviously, French Open, and then the US Open, because he had that back injury he was encountering there and coming back. And good to see some W's there in the statistic column. But yeah,
just the appearance of matches, if you look at it, right? I think the next best is should be either Edberg or Djokovic, one of these two guys who would have the most consecutive, because Edberg also has, like, I think he held the record for consecutive.
Because Feliciano Lopez is still going with this, so.
Right, of course. Yeah, that. But the matches, I don't think. He has only like 100 matches or something, I think, in all those. So 120 odd, no? So But yeah, that'll be something to look into. But I'm pretty sure Edberg or Djokovic are the next guys, you know, even though Djokovic doesn't have as many slams, because same thing again, you know, he goes very deep.
So with, yeah, but made, this one, yeah. I think I can see people beating it, like, you know, like playing more slams. I mean, just I playing the slams. So,
again. No, you have to play the slams, but yeah, without, I don't, I mean, yeah, just like the professional matches, right? I mean, it looks like of all the things, very underrated, I feel like, you know, to play 1,500 matches without retiring in any of those is just phenomenal. I don't think, you know, people will manage, and we'll see though, you know, because very few people manage, you know, to make it to 800 matches on the tour is a big deal. So to make it like how Federer does, I don't know, to have like almost a 20-year career without even one retirement, it's going to be insane.
So, yeah. But so anyway. Rajke, to put things into perspective, we've discussed all the three options, and one that remains is the fourth one, which is other, which there could have been a lot of other options that you said. And basically what happens is, if majority of our fans listening are the post Nadal Rise era fans and Nadal and Djokovic fans, for fans like those, it would be a treat to listen to what the other options were, because, you know, if there's an option called other, that means there are a few other contenders there as well. So what definitely. Can you give us?
I'll tell you what someone commented about the Agassi's career slam. So Agassi won all the four slams, right? I mean, at least once. He won Wimbledon first, and then the last slam he won was French Open, among the four slams. So that was quite remarkable. And in those days, the surfaces were much more different than they are today. And so winning all four had not been done by anybody since Rod Laver. So Agassi was the first person in 30 years, from 1969 to 1999, no one had done it. Think about the great players like Bjorn Borg and Pete Sampras and, you know, McEnroe, Lendl, Edberg. Nobody had managed like four. Best was three out of four, you know, and Agassi won all four. It's quite incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so that the more obvious ones I would say is Laver Grand Slam, Calendar Grand Slam, right, to 1969. And then
we were talking in the open era, so sort of like after that, I know it's the early open era.
No, it is open era, right,
we should count it. The sort of implicit assumption was after that, because, I mean, that's a very obvious thing to do. So, I mean,
Course, even Borg making back-to-back Wimbledon 3 years in a row.
So that was
right?
my second thing that I was going to talk about.
These are the obvious, like, you know.
Yeah, Borg won, you know, French Open and Wimbledon like three times back to back. So you win French Open and then you go and win Wimbledon, and you did this 3 years.
You could put this McEnroe's, I think he has 77 singles and 77 doubles titles. So those, that also, I don't think that's happening anytime.
Yeah, but the one problem I have with that is that's like basically his whole career. So then we are almost like discussing who had the better career. So I wanted it to be a subset of the career. Like, so this is not so much a record as the whole like career. Basically.
Right. I mean, if your career itself, I think, you know, like say if someone wins 40 slams, you have to put that, even though it is the entire career, you know, it's just a number. That's not going to
happen. Yeah, but that's sort of like it becomes a bit boring then, because by definition, the career is bigger than any sub part of it. And then so you just end up discussing.
It is, but I think, I think it's by how much they have overcome the next best, I would say. You know, like if Federer had 20 and next best was 14, it's Sampras, right? I think we would definitely have to list that as a, you know, I would feel at least. You know, that's a, but right now, because you have a guy with 18 and 16, it doesn't look as impressive, obviously, right?
Okay, fair
enough. I would think, that's what I mean, going by the measure, just how far ahead of the next guy did they take it, kind of thing. Of course, not the only way, but as you said.
And to add up to this, what about Serena Williams and Martina Navratilova?
So this was just for men's tennis, so I didn't put any women's tennis options, because then that's a whole different sort of thing you can debate about.
Different ball game, with their numbers are off the charts, you know.
Yeah,
it's like, Martin and
code violation for a coaching. Sorry, I had to say that code violation for bringing women's tennis, it would have, but anyway, a fun discussion, isn't it? And that can go on and on. I mean, these are just three perspectives of what the greatest achievement is out there, but it's never ending.
Let's give my final ranking, and let's also get it from Prakash. So just in case, like, you know, it's a brief summary. I would put number one, Nadal, 12 French Opens. Number two, Federer, 23 semis. Number three, Djokovic, Grand Slam. That's my ranking among these three.
Yeah, Prakash.
Yeah, I would put Djokovic at number one. And I think I would add take the other option and put in Borg and Lever at the second and third positions. And then I would put Nadal at four. And I guess, 23. Yeah. And Federer would be, at five.
Okay.
That's interesting.
That's interesting. That's very interesting. You know, we could have a part two of this episode and get new guys and to debate with on the podcast. Yeah. That would generally spice things up, and that is always open to discussion because it's never ending. Somebody could go on and say that a clay court of 112 French Opens on a court that he is most comfortable with, and et cetera, et cetera. You know, you could see that perspective as well. But it's fun. It's fun. And it's always good to see what others feel and respect everyone's opinions. So that was a fun episode that we did. The first one after Wimbledon. And we are approaching the US Open, which is the hard courts. We have Montreal and Cincinnati. But before that, what have we missed in the past few weeks? Some tournaments that took place. Could Rajke or Prakash, one of you, take us through the winners of those tournaments?
So I think the most interesting tournament was the one which just finished in and Dimonor won. Alex Dimonor won it in Atlanta. Yes. So you know, there were many tournaments happening simultaneously, but I think this was the one which a lot of people.
You didn't face a break point in that
tournament. Yeah, exactly. So that's what I was about to say. It's only the third time since records started in 1991 that someone has won an entire tournament without facing a break point. And he only lost seven points on serve in the entire tournament. Can you believe this?
I think on first serve.
Okay, even then.
just crazy, I think. But yeah,
I mean, across four matches, you only lose 7 points in first serve. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
And that I think might explain why Isner was like won it like five times or something like that. You know,
Rajke, I have to give Isner it to you. Like, you know, I was just a moment from spilling my tea here, and
maybe I read it wrong. I initially thought I was going completely crazy when I read this. It's not even one match, right? It's like an entire week.
No, it's not like, you know, it's not like Karlovic or Isner. No?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's got a great serve. But, you know, so Riley Opelka, the next Isner, you know, the 7 feet giant, you know, big server, he made this hilarious statement that Dimonor is the best serve that he has faced. This is the master of the serve talking about it, you know. So he should know something about it.
Seven first serve points over the week. 116 of 123 on the first serve. Unbelievable.
Yeah, and it's not like he only made like 40 first serves or something. He made 123 first serves and just lost seven of those points.
That's crazy. I mean, like...
And moving on to the tournaments now again. Hamburg and stuff.
Hamburg is over. Wessler actually won it.
Hamburg was sort of interesting, you know. Like, it was a tournament where people kept goofing up, you know. There were so many comebacks. Yeah. Almost every match was like a comeback. So, Zverev had a couple of early round scares, but then finally he managed to get into the semifinal where he was in a good position against Basilashvili, but then Basilashvili came back and beat him finally. So it was a fun week with a lot of rapidly fluctuating matches. So, true. And even in the final, it was a three-setter. Basilashvili won, then Rublev. Yeah, Basilashvili basically won. He's a very talented Georgian guy, you know, Basilashvili.
Yeah, and he defended his title, you know, for first time at Hamburg since Federer in 2005.
Yeah, so Hamburg used to be a Masters series before the French Open. It used to be in the place of the current Madrid. And when they had Madrid, they vote Hamburg to after the French Open. So it's a pretty famous tournament. You know, Federer has won it quite a few times, 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, I think he had like he had a stretch where he went like 5 finals with 4 titles or something like that at Hamburg. Before 2008, right? He lost the final to Nadal.
But he also bagged Nadal in Hamburg once. Tough as it is to believe on clay. Yeah.
This is on 2007 final.
2007, yeah.
Yeah, one of those 2 times he beat him on clay. Yeah. And actually, if you look at that, if you put Madrid as a replacement at Hamburg, right?
Yeah.
Federer, I think, had a stretch of 7 tournaments where he won 5 and lost 2 finals. To Nadal, of course. So that's a pretty good run. Between Hamburg and Madrid, you know, between 2010 and 2002, I guess. Yeah. 2002 and 2010. Yeah, 2003, I wonder what happened with Hamburg.
Yeah. And there were 3 other tournaments as well, right? And let me quickly mention them. Prasad. Yeah. So one was won by John Isner. This is at Newport. And then Newport, another one, Lajovic at Umag in Croatia.
Yeah.
And then a third one at, in Sweden, Bastad, won by Nicholas Jarry.
And I heard something about Basilashvili. Was there a semi-final against Zverev?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. He came back against Zverev. Yeah. And Zverev had, he had a couple of three-setters in this tournament. And as I said, it was a wildly fluctuating tournament where people kept leading and then giving up and that kind of giving up leads and so on and so forth.
I think Zverev was like a wild card into that tournament, basically. He was not. Yeah. And of course, other big news is that Lendl and Zverev parted ways. So.
Oh, yeah. That was coming. Lendl, I don't know whether you guys read this interview. Maybe I told you guys about this interview where Zverev was saying that Lendl keeps talking about his new dog and playing golf and stuff like that, which is not what you would expect a coach to be talking during practice, right? So, and he actually revealed this publicly. So I kind of expected this to be happening anytime. And
God! And but that's one thing. We can talk about that in some at the next episode, but. Let's quickly build up to what we are going to have in the next month, because it's a busy month. It's a month of Montreal, Cincinnati, and the US Open. So it's going to be a hell of a month. What do we expect, Prakash, from the next month?
Well, of course, the big tournaments with the 2 Masters and ultimately the big one, the US Open. So
the final Grand Slam of the year.
Yeah. One thing I think people have not noticed is that Djokovic looks on track for 3 out of 4 for the third time.
Yeah.
In a year, which I think is Federer is the only one who has done that 2004, 2006, and 2007. And Djokovic having done it in 2011 and 2015 is a pattern, in 2019.
It's
a 4-year pattern, which might.
That's interesting.
So something to talk about. But Federer and Djokovic are both skipping Montreal, which to some extent makes sense after that lengthy final, that they had to play. So both of them taking time to make sure they recover.
And remember that Nadal is defending Montreal. He won it last time.
Montreal, right.
Yeah, so he's 1,000 points at stake, and he might just secure that second seed for US Open, isn't it?
Yeah. So that's important. Definitely. I mean, like, the next 2 tournaments will tell us who finishes, second. And as per my calculations, Federer is just around 80 points behind Nadal, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
If you remove their points from Montreal and Cincinnati. So basically, what that means is he has to do 1 better than Nadal.
Yeah.
If Nadal doesn't play Cincinnati, so let's say Nadal plays Montreal and Federer plays Cincinnati, which could happen because Nadal may not Cincinnati, I guess, because it's back-to-back Masters, right? So then if Nadal reaches quarterfinal, Federer has to reach semi and so on and so forth. So it's going to be interesting. And of course, if Nadal wins, then Federer is going to be third.
And very interesting. And, it's always fun to speak about these discussions. Maybe we'll ask our viewers to listen to this episode and comment or tweet what they feel about their thoughts. And if anyone would want to come on the episode and have a debate or something like that, we're always open to healthy debates. But it's been a fun episode, 15 days after the Wimbledon final. And it's good to be back on the Tennis Galaxy podcast. Our last episode was pretty smashing. And I hope this smashes the roof as well. With Prakash and Rajki, it's always fun. And building up to the exciting hard court season, which is just around the corner. It's going to be one hell of an August. And obviously, a lot of birthdays there. A lot of famous birthdays. And yeah, a lot of them to look forward to. Until the next time, Prakash and Rajki, if you would like to add, we would have to wrap this episode up now.
Yeah, so, well, two birthdays that you definitely should look forward to are on August 8th, you know, 8-8.
Yeah.
Like 8 is the lucky number in China, so you have 8-8, you know, and no prizes for guessing whose birthday it is. It's Federer.
Yeah, and I cut a cake every year that day, yeah.
Also Felix, so cut a cake for Felix too, you know.
Yeah.
Let's hope that. Now he's going to be 19, still very, very young, of course. And let's hope that he can really make this month very special and do some damage at the Masters, you know, both the Masters and perhaps even at the US Open. Because we've discussed this before, US Open is a pretty open slam compared to the others, where the big three are like keeping all the slams in their grasp. So maybe Felix can, you know, try to break that monopoly, like Tillich and Del Potro and Wawrinka before him.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. So fun episode, guys, and great discussion. All the three polls, the three options, and then, you know, the fourth one. But it's been great, and I mean the new fans, and you know the post Nadal era fans would love to hear this episode because it gives them a lot of inside news, inside information from, you know, the world of tennis and the Open era. And it's always been fun, like I said, talking to Prakash and Rajke. Until the next episode where we come back, here's your host Prasad signing out with Prakash and Rajke on this episode of the Tennis Galaxy podcast.